Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Yep, we hear you. Let's get you some beautiful windows that won't warp at warp speed. Durable, weather-friendly Vibrix windows and a seamless professional process. A free, no-pressure renewal by Andersen consultation is just a call or click away. When it's time to talk windows, we'll bring the wisdom. Renewal by Andersen.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Looking for the perfect base camp to explore Moab's stunning landscapes? Welcome to Spanish Trail RV Park, just 3 miles south of downtown Moab. Enjoy spacious pull-through sats with full hookups, free Wi-Fi, and cable TV. Relax in our heated pool and spa after a day of adventure. Clean restrooms, laundry facilities, and a pet-friendly environment make your stay comfortable. With breathtaking views of Red Rock Cliffs and the La Salle Mountains, Spanish Trail RV Park offers a serene retreat. Plus, you're just minutes away from Arches and Canyonlands National Parks. Experience the beauty and convenience of Spanish Trail RV Park, your home away from home in Moab. Book your stay today at SpanishTrailRVPark.com.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Doctor, are you aware, I know your lab at Good Samaritan did not do this process, but are you aware through your training experience of any sort of mathematical conversion that can be done from a serum reading in milligram per deciliter to a blood alcohol concentration of whole blood?
Objection. I'm going to allow it. The door was open.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I am aware. Yep.
And please describe what you're aware of with reference to that.
Well, with blood alcohol concentrates goes to, when it's in your blood, it goes more to the watery components of your blood. So when I described the process earlier, whole blood is before we spin it. And when we test this, the plasma, which is specifically testing the watery component. Now, people have done studies like how much percentage of water is a serum versus whole blood. Basically, to put it simple, there's a higher percentage of water in the serum versus whole blood. So a hospital result will always be a little bit higher than a test on whole blood. It can be, I think the ratio, the conversion factor is anywhere from 1.1 to 1.18. It's always could be 18% or 11% higher in serum versus whole blood. But we don't do it. That's what I read. I will defer that to the experts.
Now, doctor, you were referencing in your cross-examination about a study that you were aware of about 10 years ago or so regarding MS and alcohol testing. Is that correct?
It was more on MS, looking at the results of lactic acid and LDH to see how high the levels of lactic acid can go in a group of multiple sclerosis patients. When reviewing that, we found that the range went from some normal range, 16% of the multiple sclerosis patients had normal lactic acids, but the remainder had elevated levels. But those levels were not anywhere near the required levels to produce a false positive. Our package inserts and for the Roche testing system, the Roche has it's an FDA-approved test, and they have to do in-depth, detailed testing before they allow any hospital to do a test. And they have listed levels of lactic acid beyond which the test would not be reliable. But the results, based on this study of 600 multiple sclerosis patients, two big centers in Italy and one in the Netherlands, show that the highest level of lactic acid in the MS patients did not achieve, didn't get close. Usually patients with MS that are asymptomatic can have normal or low normal levels, or slightly elevated. It was the ones that had more symptoms that had elevated levels up to, I think the highest was 6.5 millimoles per deciliter, which is not high enough to interfere with our result.
Now, with respect to the lab at Good Samaritan Medical Center, the interference that you were speaking about earlier on cross-examination, what would happen if any of those types of interference were to occur during the course of the testing?
Objection? No, I'll allow it.
The three main ones, which I detailed earlier, is the hemolysis, icterus, and lipemia. Our machines are sophisticated. It will detect it and say, it will flag it and say, please do not result it, or we'll have a disclaimer saying, interpret this result with caution. The results may not be accurate. It hardly ever happens with alcohol testing. But if it did, we would get a result like that, and we probably wouldn't report it.
And from your review of the defendant's medical records, specifically her testing from January 29th, did you notice any interference or any reports like that in her record?
No.
Now, the testing that you're doing at Good Samaritan is in relation to patients such as that might have cancer or heart disease or something like that, correct?
Correct.
Now, you were talking or started to speak on cross-examination about the good quality lab results that you have from your lab, and you wanted to go into that further. Could you please expound upon that for the jury now?
You mentioned proficiency testing before. So all hospital laboratories accredited by the CAP or have to participate in proficiency testing. What that means is that it's three times a year, and they give us five unknown samples. And we have to test it, report it back to CAP, which also reports back to the government. And we have to basically get the correct answers. And with alcohol testing, it's probably one of the best tests in the laboratory. Have right on the money results. But at the same time, we're also able to look at results of all the other labs that participated in this proficiency testing. So we can look at different methods. We can look at labs that had the same method as us to see how we're doing. Usually, with this proficiency testing, we have 3,000 labs across the nation that have the same methodology as us, so we can compare to them. And also, interestingly, we can see the labs that are using headspace gas chromatography. And out of interest, we can see, how do we compare? We have pretty exactly the same results on these proficiency testings. We also look at some statistics as well, not going into them, but we can look at some stats like standard deviations and SDs, and Actually, the hospitals with enzymatic testing have slightly better stats with that compared to Headspace. Pretty close, but a little bit better.
And doctor, from your review of the defendant's medical records and the blood testing in this case, was that done in conformity with the policies and protocols at Good Samaritan?
We have policies in place to be followed, and there's no reason not to think that somebody didn't follow policy.
Thank you, sir.
Anything else, Ms. Little?
No questions.
All right, doctor, you are all set, sir. Thank you. Do you have another witness, Mr. Brennan?
I do.
Okay.
The Commonwealth calls Jason Becker.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you shall give to the court and the jury in the matter now pending shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Good afternoon, sir. All right, Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Could you please introduce yourself to the jury?
My name is Jason Becker.
How old are you?
I am 36 years old.
Do you live in the area?
I do. I live in Canton.
Tell us a little bit about your education.
My education, high school and college UMass. And I went to EMT school a little over 10 years ago and paramedic school.
Tell me a little bit about EMT school. How old were you when you started EMT school?
When I started EMT school, roughly 21 years old.
Why did you decide to go to EMT school?
I wanted to save some lives.
Tell us a little bit about EMT school. What did it require?
EMT school was a couple months of classroom stuff, and then you do some ride time on the ambulance. Paramedic school is a little different. It's about a little extended, 2 years worth of training. You're doing hospital, ER time, and ambulance time also.
How long did you serve as an EMT before you went to paramedic school?
I worked as an EMT for approximately 5 years.
Can you estimate how many dozens or hundreds of calls you were on during that time?
Hundreds.
Why did you decide then to go get paramedic training?
Oh, I wanted to be on the fire department, and it was a prerequisite.
Did you complete paramedic school successfully?
I did.
Were you still working as an EMT at the time?
I was.
And inevitably, did you seek to have a different job? Did you try to be a firefighter?
I wanted to be a firefighter, correct. Were
you successful in doing that?
I was.
Tell us a little bit about that, sir.
On the Canton Fire Department. So I got on the Canton Fire Department, and they send you to the fire academy, where you train to be a firefighter.
So you had EMT training, paramedic training, and then firefighter training?
That's correct.
On the Canton Police Department, did you serve dual roles as a paramedic and as a firefighter?
Fire department?
Yes,
Yes, sir. Firefighter and as a paramedic.
You served as a firefighter and a paramedic?
Correct.
In the Canton Fire Department, does it have more than one station?
There's two.
Is there one station that's larger or smaller than the other?
Station one is the headquarters, which is larger.
Had you ever spent time at Station 1 as a firefighter or a paramedic?
I have. We rotate to both stations.
I want you to take us back to January 29th, 2022. Were you working that evening?
I was.
What station were you assigned to?
Canton Station 2.
Canton Fire Station 2?
Correct.
And that's the smaller of the two stations?
It is.
Were you working with anybody at Fire Station 2 that night?
My ambulance partner at the time was firefighter Dan Whitley.
Was there anybody else who was working at Fire Station 2 in addition to you and Dan Whitley?
Correct. There was an engine company with three guys on it.
Three people were assigned to the
engine, correct. Yep.
Were you and Dan Whitley assigned as partners for the day, the week?
Correct. Yes, we were.
Which was it, the day or the week, sir?
The week.
So for the entire week, you're partners with a person, and does that rotate on other assignments?
It does. It rotates.
So on this particular week, you were assigned as partners with Dan Whitley?
I was.
What were your roles between the two of you?
Well, at the time, he was my preceptor. I was a new paramedic at the time. So I was more or less the lead tech on all the calls as part of my training. And Dan's been a paramedic for a long time. So he was there to teach me.
So would Dan Whitley be the lead on the call and he would help you?
I would be the lead.
You would be the lead?
Correct.
Did you get a call that early morning hours of January 29, 2022?
We did.
What was the call assigned for?
It was a call for Section 12 psych eval.
Very briefly, can you tell us what a Section 12 is?
Sure. It's a transportation order filled out by police, doctor, basically for us on the ambulance that we have to take the patient, whether voluntarily or involuntarily, because they're a threat to themselves or someone else.
When you received the call for a Section 12, were you aware that there were other calls that Fire Station 1 had responded to that morning?
We were aware. You can hear the calls going out each station.
Were you or Dan Whitley any part of that earlier call that Fire Station 1 responded to before you got the call for the Section 12?
We were not.
So your efforts were after?
We were after, correct.
After you got the call to respond to a Section 12, did you head towards Fairview Road?
We did.
Tell us a little bit about the trip to Fairview Road.
It was a little extended because of the weather conditions at the time. Snowing heavily, windy, low visibility.
Okay. How long did it take to get from Fire Station 2 to Fairview Road?
Approximately 8 to 10 minutes.
Who drove?
Firefighter Whitley.
Now, on the way to Fairview Road, do you sit in the front of the ambulance?
We do.
Take us to when you arrive to Fairview Road. What do you see?
You see a bunch of police lights. Canton Engine 3 was already on scene, so we parked behind them.
Did you have it, without talking about what you spoke about, did you have a chance to speak to anybody at the scene?
We briefly spoke to the Canton police, and they briefed us and sent us to where the defendant was at the time.
Why do you have a conversation with other first responders at the scene before you do anything?
They're making sure the scene is safe to begin with, and they're unseen first, so they have a little more info than what our dispatch would have.
After you had that debriefing with colleagues, were you directed to approach any certain person?
I was.
Where did you go?
I went to the defendant, who was sitting in a black SUV type car.
Were there other persons inside the car with the defendant?
From my understanding, there was one person in the driver's seat.
And what seat was the defendant in?
She was in the front passenger seat.
Did you have a chance to speak to her?
I did.
And the person you spoke to who was in the passenger seat of that car, do you see that person in court today?
I do.
Could you point out and describe an article of clothing, please?
Ms. Reed right there, she's in the blue, navy blue.
How long was your conversation with the defendant while she was still seated inside the vehicle?
Approximately 5 to 8 minutes.
At some point, did you and the defendant move to another location?
We did.
Where did you go?
So we went back in the ambulance.
After having a conversation with her, was she cooperative going back to the ambulance with you?
She was.
And did you ask her to be seated in the ambulance?
I did.
Was she cooperative with that as well?
She was.
After she was seated in the ambulance, did you close the doors and get in?
We did.
When you say we, who was with you?
Me and Firefighter Whitley.
So you and Firefighter Whitley were in the back of the ambulance with Ms. Reed. Who was going to drive the ambulance?
Firefighter Sam Park.
Where did he come from?
He was on the fire engine that was already on scene.
I want to ask you questions now about what you did in the back of the ambulance and some of the conversations that you had. Tell us what your role is once you have a patient in the back of the ambulance. What do you do next?
Each patient's different. Depends on what the call is for. In this specific situation, it was more a psych eval, because that's what we'll call for. Initial triage questions. Is the patient cooperative, uncooperative, combative? I asked her name, her mental status, where she was. I asked her if she was suicidal And if she was, did she have a plan? Did she want to hurt anyone else? Those are some of the initial triage questions that I would ask.
Why do you ask those questions?
Just to get a kind of a judgment on the patient, reading the patient.
What's your role at that point? Are you an investigator?
I'm not.
Are you in any way law enforcement?
I'm not.
So what's your focus when you're speaking to a patient?
It's basically hearing them speak in their story. In this specific situation, we didn't know circumstances. We just knew that Ms. Reed had found her husband, which she was gone dead on the side of the road. So it was a traumatic call.
So when you were there, you knew nothing about what had happened before you got there?
We did not.
And your role had nothing to do with any of that investigation?
We did not.
You were solely focused on caring for the patient?
Correct.
Did you have any other role other than caring for the patient?
Just making sure she got to the hospital safely. She didn't hurt herself.
During those conversations, are you and Firefighter Whitley doing the same thing or different things?
Again, it depends on the call. I was the lead tech, so you know, I'm the one documented, giving report to the nurses, the staff. So I was more kind of getting that information, my initial triage questions, and then just kind of sat and supported Ms. Reed. And
were you writing down information, technical information about status and health on a report?
I was, yes.
While you were doing that, was your colleague speaking to Ms. Reed?
He was.
Did you have a chance at times to hear what they were speaking about?
Yeah, and no.
At other times, did you speak directly to Ms. Reed?
I have.
Can you describe her demeanor or temperament?
Initially, she was agitated because she didn't feel like she needed to go to the hospital. She said the statement she made, she didn't mean. She just kind of said in jest because of the events that she went through. So she was, but then there'd be periods of which she'd be calm. And then it would fluctuate. She would have like pressured speech, repetitive. But all in all, she was cooperative.
At some point, did you have a chance to speak to her directly about her mood?
About her mood?
About her mood.
I don't know if I understand the question.
Okay. Did she say anything to you about her last interaction with what she referred to as her husband?
Objection.
Sustained.
Did she make any statements to you when you were giving her treatment or speaking to her about her husband?
Objection.
I'll allow that. It came in.
One of the reasons why she was saying suicidal stuff is because the last conversation she had with her husband at the time was an argument. I didn't feel like it was my role to really find out the details on what was said. But that's what she said to me.
That the last thing she said to him was an argument?
Yes.
Sustained.
Did she tell you what the argument was about?
She did not.
Inevitably, did you get a chance to bring her to the hospital?
We did.
Did you stay in the back of the ambulance with her?
I did.
Did you continue to have conversations with her?
Yes, I did.
Did you hear conversations or parts of conversations she was having with your colleague?
I had parts.
When you got to the hospital, what happens next?
So we brought Ms. Reed into the hospital, registered her, bring her to the psychiatric section.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Okay. Mr. Jackson?
Thank you, Ellen.
I have just a moment, Your Honor.
Yes.
Good afternoon, Firefighter Becker.
Good afternoon.
When you first arrived at the scene, there was at least two Canton police officers there still.
Correct.
Do you remember their names?
Officer Sarif and Officer Mulvaney.
Okay. Their cruiser was there. You said that an engine was still there?
Correct.
And was there another ambulance there, or the other ambulance had already left the scene? They'd cleared.
They had already transported to the hospital.
Remind me, you were in ambulance two?
I was ambulance two.
Got it. You parked behind the SUV where you ultimately made contact with Ms. Reed, correct?
I think it was more in front of the SUV because the way the SUV was parked.
Got it. Got out of the ambulance, ultimately made contact with Ms. Reed through the passenger door?
Correct.
Had a short conversation with her there?
I did.
You said it was maybe 5 to 8 minutes?
More like 5 minutes because of the weather conditions.
Okay, nothing of great consequence, I'm guessing, just an initial, I think you called it sort of a triage assessment?
Well, it was more of just introducing myself and asking her how she was doing.
Got it. And then there was one other person in the cab of the vehicle as well?
There was.
Female, male?
Female.
So there are two females, one Ms. Reed, one another female. Did you see any other civilian females out there?
I didn't see.
Okay, but. So at least where you were, the contact that you had with Ms. Reed and this other female, there was just two of them, not a third one.
From what I saw, correct.
Did you get the other female's name?
Not at the time, I did not.
Okay. Have you since gotten her name?
Based on a conversation Firefighter Whitley and Ms. Reed had back in the ambulance.
Got it. Okay. And who was that other person?
Ms. Carrie Roberts.
Okay. When you first observed Ms. Reed, did you note whether or not there was anything unusual about her physical appearance, meaning anything on her?
She did, yes.
Describe that for the jurors, please.
So she had some blood around her mouth, her neck area.
At that point, were you concerned about, obviously you're concerned mainly about her safety and getting her safely to the hospital, correct?
That's correct.
Were you worried that might be her blood?
Well, she had said that she had given CPR to her husband.
Okay, you jumped a question ahead. I was gonna say, did she tell you that it was in fact not her blood?
She did, so that kind of, in a way, ruled it out. Okay. No injury for me.
And you didn't notice anything about her that looked like she was physically injured or physically in harm?
I did not.
Okay. She indicated that she had given CPR, mouth-to-mouth, attempts at mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to Mr. O'Keefe, correct?
She did.
And that would account for the blood on her face and in her hair and on her neck?
That's what she told me.
Okay. And based on your observations of her, you didn't have any reason to quarrel with that?
Correct.
Okay. You indicated that her tone was somewhat rapid and repetitive, is that right?
It fluctuated, so at times it was, yes.
Did it appear to you at that time that she had gone through a pretty significant trauma, as best you were trained at the time?
Objection.
A little bit more of a foundation, I'll give it to you.
Sure. Have you ever, in your course of training, seen individuals who have gone through some sort of a traumatic event?
Frequently.
Frequently.
Everyone's different, though.
Understood. Obviously, everybody's got their own personalities and the way of dealing with those things, right?
Sure.
Have you been able to, through your training, assess whether, at least in your belief, your observations, if someone has gone through a relatively traumatic event, as opposed to just someone whistling down the sidewalk?
Yes.
Okay. Did it appear at that time, when you're interacting with Ms. Reed, that she was showing the signs consistent of having gone through a trauma?
At the time, yes.
Okay. So, hence the rapid speech, the repetitive speech, things of that nature.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Looking for the perfect getaway in the heart of Red Rock Country? Discover Grand Plateau RV Resort in Kanab, Utah, where comfort meets adventure. Spacious RV sites, luxury cabins, and top-tier amenities make every stay unforgettable. Take a dip in the heated pool, relax in the spa, or unwind with private restrooms and pickleball too. Minutes from Zion, Bryce Canyon, and the Grand Canyon, Grand Plateau RV Resort is your ideal base camp for exploring the Southwest's natural wonders. And when the day winds down, enjoy starry skies and peaceful nights under the desert sky. Adventure, comfort, and convenience. That's Grand Plateau RV Resort. Book your stay today at gprvresort.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.